You're listening to Morning Edition on WNYC. Slavery, prison life, stop and frisk. These are some of the heavy topics that two young African-American playwrights turn into comedy with their new works. Marcus Gardley wrote The Box, a black comedy, which recently closed at the Irondale Center in Brooklyn. And Brandon Jacobs Jenkins' play, An Octoroon, is currently at Soho Rep in Tribeca. WNYC's Arun Venugopal invited them both in to talk about their works, and Arun joins us now. Good morning, Arun.
Hi.
So what's interesting about these plays?
Well, it's not often that you have two African-American playwrights with shows on at the same time. Theater is pretty much a white art form. We don't have numbers for off-Broadway where both these plays live or lived. But according to the Broadway League, the audience last year for Broadway shows was only 3.5% African-American, so pretty low. As far as both these plays go, they both draw inspiration from very interesting works and backgrounds. I actually asked Brandon why he took on a classic, Diane Boucicault's The Octoroon, which was written in 1859. Octoroon refers to someone who is 1/8 black, and here's what he told me.
I don't know, man. I think I've been sort of haunted by the play. And it also, for its day, was like this incredible sensation, you know, that's basically been forgotten.
I read that it was second to Uncle Tom's Cabin at the time, which is kind of amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it was written sort of in response to Uncle Tom's Cabin. And Diane Boucicault, for his time, was sort of like the most famous of all the playwrights. I don't know, I'm always sort of attracted to sort of like marginal stories or kind of people who are the people that time forgot. You know, I don't know why.
Now, Marcus, you deal with a lot more, I guess, contemporary issues in your latest play, Stop and Frisk, Prison Life, and use current idioms like hip-hop. But you also draw from ancient myths, right?
Yes,
why
absolutely.
Is that?
This actually relates to the whole thing about being labeled a black playwright. I think sometimes it's hard for people to see my work if it's not adapted, because it's, to me, it's like a way to lure them in to the world, and then I break it. I'm interested in like breaking stereotypes, but also breaking narrative. All of my plays are nonlinear, and so I usually use a myth to lure. People think, oh, this is going to be an adaptation of the myth, and then I bust the myth open so that we can look at both the tradition of the story, but also how African-American people are trapped and how we can either get ourselves out of these trappings or why are we trapped? Why we always say we're trapped in this box, in this narrative?
Now, Brandon, The Octoroon, it mines a lot of its humor from the subject of slavery. And let's listen to a clip here.
Now, so Peyton wanted me to poke a game like 10 years ago.
Oh, okay, so you know Christine Darnell now.
Yeah!
Here you have a couple women, both slaves. And they have a pretty good time on the plantation.
I would say they're having a good time, you know. Good time when you're
they seem pretty happy, relatively speaking. And the audience, as you can tell, is really having a good time as well. They're really responding to this. Now, slavery is not a topic that we're supposed to laugh about.
True.
So what were you thinking?
Oh, yeah, now I'm on the spot. I mean, I feel, you know, I think a lot about slavery as a descendant of slaves, you know, and I recently kind of went crazy and got on like Ancestry.com, you know, like with my, get like a 1 week trial or something. The real tragedy of slavery, yes, I mean, things like 12 Years a Slave and Beloved and these sort of amazing, iconic pieces of work that are about sort of the most severe kind of forms of abuse that I think people endured, you know, are incredibly crucial. But I think that there is a story to slavery that is about the nameless stories we never will get, because the actual system itself, like, was about erasing, you know, entire subjecthoods from history and treating them like vessels of work or something. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And Marcus, I mean, in terms of dealing with prison life, were there ever moments when you're writing when the play is, I guess, taking shape where you worry whether it's trivializing it? Is there a fine line?
Well, you know, the first original draft, and I invited an audience, you know, after the first draft to hear it and see how an audience would respond. The feedback was they, early on, because the piece was so deep and so intense, they shut down. And so the first thing I realized is I need to make it a comedy. It needs to be a satire. And I think the creative people that I were working with were like, you can't write a comedy about the prison industrial complex. And I said, oh, yeah, that's the only way. And so it was a huge challenge for me, but I'm so glad I did it. You know, we cry and laugh with the same muscle. And so I think comedy, if you really warm that muscle up, you can really actually use it to give people a cathartic experience. And that's what we tried to do. I mean, one of my dear friends saw it and said, you know, I laughed all the way through it up until the end, and then you just crushed me. I didn't see it coming. And I said, that's what I was trying to do. I want people to feel the weight of what these prisoners have to go through, but I don't want you to see it coming, because they don't see it coming.
You're both young black playwrights. Is it a little suffocating to be called a black playwright? Is it a term of solidarity? Both?
You know, I actually don't know what that phrase means. I don't hear people refer to as white playwrights, you know, so I just don't. I'm kind of always mystified by that title. Yeah, personally, exactly. I can't speak for everyone else.
And Brandon, you actually referred to the term black playwright in the opening of your play.
Yeah, it's the very first line of my play. Yeah, it's the first joke is I'm a black playwright. I don't know what that means.
still mystified.
Yeah, still mystified. You know, there definitely was a such thing as the black arts movement, you know, which is a very important kind of moment in our theater history. And I feel that was definitely about asking the question of what is black arts and in some way trying to define it. But I can't say I am a part of that movement.
But is it like is there like a fraternity of sorts? Do you know each other from panels?
I get this question a lot about the fraternity, the black fraternity. You know, I think people think we meet secretly in a dark room and take over the world.
Skull and bones.
That's not happening. You know, I think we do. Many of us share ideas and many of us share, you know, experiences because we do work in the same circles. But I find that term limiting often because, you know, they also do the same thing with our plays. Our plays are become black too.
Right.
Are they black because we're writing them? Are they black because there are black people in them?
Right.
What happens if black people aren't in them? Then what?
I personally feel like in a lineage of artists of color or whatever you want to call it, whose challenge in that kind of era of multiculturalism, even the black arts movement, was about sort of defining a black.
That's right.
You know, and now
that's
suddenly there feels like there's the question of options.
Right.
You know, and I think that's interesting.
And August Wilson, you know, he was declaring this is black work, these are black voices, these are black stories, which was great for its time. But, you know, I think this new generation of writers who are African-American are asking different questions and are writing plays in a different aesthetic.
All right. Well, thank you. Marcus Gardley, Brandon Jacobs-Jukins, both playwrights. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.